Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it is Friday and time for Draining Tech Talk. So welcome, Allison Black, my co-host.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Nancy. It's a pleasure to be here.
And our studio audience is excited, as always. I've yet to hear any boos from them, so that's good.
No, they're kind people. You know, if they don't have something nice to say, they don't say anything at all.
Well, speaking of nice and booing or happy, so today's show is going to be on how you can either kind of examine the way you speak or change the way you speak to control your emotions to control the outcome of the conversation.
Yes.
And you being a professional voiceover artist and professional actress, I thought, what a great topic for you to chime in on and contribute to. So you can do it from the acting side of things.
Absolutely.
And then I can share with our audience how your vocal cords, or folds is the actual technical name now I've learned, actually are tied directly to your emotions. And I don't think people think about it, even though it's just innate in nature, the way that we speak in certain scenarios, but your voice changes depending upon what you're feeling. If you're feeling fear, happiness, sadness, fright, exhilaration, all of that is tied directly to kind of the, I don't want to say chemical reaction, but the way that the air is passed over your vocal cords, but it is tied to the brain sensors in your body that control the way the vocal cords react.
Absolutely. And I think that also, Nancy, as a listener, we are subconsciously aware of those differences as well. I think sometimes it's so subconscious, they can't tell why this person seems like they're anxious, but they just seem like everything they did was fine, but something in my you know, being is making me feel like, I don't know, this person wasn't conveying clearly what, like everything wasn't in parallel. Like there was something askew, I think that often shows up in our gut feeling or our gut reaction to things, for sure. I think from an acting perspective, definitely it makes a huge difference. If anybody can think about when they've had a moment where they felt just like they were firing on all cylinders, and maybe extra cylinders showed up in their world and they're firing on those too. They're just, anything they do, it's like the pathway is paved with gold. You just feel confident. Every joke you make, people think is funny. Everything is and I'm not talking like chemically, like, oh, I've snorted cocaine and now I feel that way. I'm like, legitimately, naturally, you are feeling that way. And it's amazing and enticing and interesting, and things feel effortless to you, and it's amazing. Somebody who runs into you will also be quite caught up with what is going on in your world. You're open, and it is all these things that I think are pointing all in the same direction. They're all parallel with each other as far as they're, everything's aligning just really, really well. And if it's the challenge is then to find out, what did I do to help me feel that way? How can I feel more confident? How can I practice that? Because you can practice getting to those places. That's certainly what actors do. And I bet you're going to have some real hard and fast data around what I just said.
Well, that, and, you know, I want to get into a little bit later how an actor does get into that space of, because you're on stage, and I've been on stage before as a singer, and sometimes, you know, you've rehearsed the material, you know what to do, but your body is still taking over and having these nervous reactions. So, like, my knees will be shaking even though I'm singing great. why are my knees shaking? Can anybody else see that my knees are shaking? I'm not nervous, but why are my knees shaking? You know,
but
you have a physiology reaction to this.
Right.
and there's something that's subconsciously trying to make you nervous about the situation. So with actors, the same thing. I'm sure you've been in situations where you're in a scene where you're confident or your character's confident, but you've got butterflies in your stomach. So how do you mask that in your voice? Because that's a dead giveaway.
Right. The first thing I think that's really important to keep in mind, and it's hard to believe, everyone, no matter who it is, if it's President Obama, who speaks to a lot of people, people who are fantastic speakers, if you ask them, we all have situations where that happens. And I think, one, to help yourself remember, you are not the only one out there that has trouble with this, because I think when we start feeling anxious in some part of our body, like you said, your knees, you start feeling shaky, like we focus on that in such a way that it distracts us from everything else that's going great. And I think that is the first thing, is to accept it. You know what? Oh, wow, my knees are shaking. No big deal.
Right.
My knees have shaken before. Have I gotten through it, or have my knees always shook after that? Like, no, of course it stopped. All right, so we know it can stop, and it will stop. Focusing on it is not going to make it stop, clearly. So I think if you can work on the head game by getting out of the head game is really a key thing. Then I think the other really important thing that happens when your head starts jumping in and saying, hey, Nancy, my knees are shaking, is you're allowing yourself to become disconnected from what you're doing. So if there's a way to take a breath, I know you're in the middle of singing, but to focus more on the words of what you're saying, conveying the emotion of what you're saying, being as much, figure out ways that work for you to get into the moment will really take you out of your head, because you can't be in the moment and be in your head. It's just the two don't work together. The head wants to talk to you about all the things that are going wrong, but when you're in the moment, which is what we were describing before, when you're feeling like you're really open and everything's working for you perfectly, it's because you're allowing yourself to be present, connected, and in the moment, no matter whether you're acting, whether you're singing, whether you're talking with somebody. Something that isn't you, like, let's be in the moment. Let's focus on where we are and be here more. Even just if it's a little step that you can take each time, knowing that that's my intention, is I just need to be here more. I need to listen better. I need to just, what are they saying? What am I feeling about that? Get out of the head. My knees are shaking. Oh, my God, my knees stopped shaking.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're lost in that moment, which is beautiful to watch, beautiful to experience when somebody is in the moment with you, even in a sales call. I know it sounds really maybe a little odd and maybe a little artsy-fartsy to say that, but really when you're having a good connection with somebody, it's beautiful. And they remember that because emotionally you're connecting. And that's really what
don't you think that comes from practice, or do some people have that naturally?
I think some people are better at it than others, but I think we all have to practice it. I think you get yourself into trouble when you feel like there are just people that don't have to ever worry about that. Because I used to think that way, coming into acting a little late in life or returning to it late in life. Made me feel like I had missed out a lot, and everybody else was so much far ahead than me, and I had so many reasons to be critical of myself, which is what being an actor is all about, you know, learning to deal with that criticism. But more than anything, the gift that people have given me that I respect so much are that we all experience that, no matter how advanced we have been in our careers, how many accolades and awards we've won or not, we all run into those things because it's human. It's not just actors. It's a human thing. We have this great brain that's developed and evolved over many thousands of years, but it has evolved for good reasons. And there's that voice that's in your head that tells you things so that you don't get eaten, but the chances of us getting eaten these days are a little bit less often. but still that voice is there.
Literally eaten, but concerned. Eaten in other ways, yeah.
Right, right, exactly. There's a good movie out that's a kids movie by Pixar called Inside mm-hmm. Out that really, I think, could be a great tool to talk about it, the five
yeah.
main emotions that
absolutely.
You feel and what their purposes are and how they help you and how they hinder you sometimes. And I think just even having
mm-hmm.
a name for them and talking about it really lessens the power that they can have over you, and you can see the value of them.
Yeah, I'm going to put a link to Terry Gross, who's my favorite all-time interviewer from Fresh Air. She interviewed, I forget the guy's first name, his last name is Doctors, who developed that show, and he was basing it on his daughter, who went from kind of that girly stage of playing with dolls to being irritated by everything her father did. And this is pre-teen.
Oh, she became an adolescent.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There you go. And so he talks about the scientists that they talked to about how should we categorize the emotions that are in this cartoon.
Right.
And Terry Gross says, she says, well, if you were Jewish or Irish, you would have picked guilt as one of them.
Right. Shame is a big one there, too. Or sadness.
Oh, yeah. So she was, you know, asking how they kind of categorize them and whatnot. But so I'm going to put a link to that interview because I think it's very appropriate for our discussion. But kind of going
absolutely.
Back to the physiology of what's going on there when there's really something in your brain. So I just found this, excerpt from a book that I found this morning about the muscular complexities of the larynx indicate the complex muscular actions required for moving the head and throat. These actions are, for obvious physical reasons, are used even more for communication. So all muscles are operated by nerves and neural responses. The nerves in the throat, therefore, affect the whole area of the vocal cords. So this, I know it sounds stupid, but I never made the connection till recently that there are nerves in your throat that are then therefore controlled by how nervous or not nervous you are.
Yes, I think that totally makes sense.
So it says the sympathetic nerve endings in throat counteract or shut down the vagus nerve activity when adrenaline released by emotional stimuli. So there's actually chemical reaction things going on with your nerves and your nerve endings in your throat, and all of these are kind of intertwined with, it says, changes to vocal tone reveals thoughts and emotions we feel and express. If distressed or anxious, nervous, frightened, or digestive system is also affected too through the sympathetic nervous system. So this term ANS, I don't know what that stands for, connects them all, a circle of tension from the throat to the stomach to the internal organs and back again.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't know why I just, you know, because I've lived this whole life not thinking that, oh, there's a physical chemical thing that's going on with my physical vocal folds.
Sure.
And so I just like, what? Okay, now I get it.
Right. I mean, there's something when somebody says, you know, you've got a lump in your throat, what that really feels,
uh-huh.
you feel that. But you also, like you said, feel that in your stomach. You may feel that in your esophagus and things leading to your lungs
yeah.
and making it hard to breathe. I mean, there's all
yep.
kinds of really, that, and that's that vagus nerve really controls all that stuff, which is just fascinating. When you said that, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to look at the vagus nerve. And sure as heck, it's involved with all that stuff, which goes back to the suggestion of the first thing to do when you feel your knees shaking like that, and to breathe. Let's oxygenate
right.
ourselves.
Right.
Because one of the things we do so quickly when we're nervous that we don't know we do is we breathe shallowly, in a shallow manner, and that takes away from the oxygen.
Or hold your breath, too. You're like
right.
holding your
oh
breath.
Oh, my gosh.
Back.
Sure.
So this other, so this other study I found took kind of, because you've done this, and I want you to talk about this, but I'll give you the science mm-hmm. behind it. They took actors, and actors were supposed to express certain speech patterns based upon emotions. So it says four actors in comparison with natural or neutral speech portrayals of fear, joy, anger were each associated with higher means of the frequency. So they're measuring the frequency of the voice.
Right.
And they have actually levels of frequencies that certain categories of emotions will fit into. So it says across studies, portrayals of emotions associated with high levels of physiological arousal, such as anger, fear, anxiety, and joy, have been associated with increases in the mean of the frequency. They have a little zero, something dash, and variable in vocal intensity. So some acoustic differentiation among these emotions has been found by examining the frequencies of these different patterns. So they're actually measuring the frequencies in the voice, so similar to kind of our emotimeter. You know, now I'm beginning to really understand how this emotimeter works.
Right.
Because there's certain frequencies that are portrayed based upon physiological emotions. So they said the on the low end, the low levels of arousal are with sadness. You know, so there's a direct dissonance of joy is at one level and sadness is a different level. So when they get into these actors to say, you know, and I think you did it for, was it for a medical school that was trying to help people understand when a patient talks to them, how to pick up certain things that they're saying, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So give me an example of one of the situations you had to do.
Well, what it was, it was for a study that was being done with children, actually, and they were going to be doing, and I'm not sure exactly how this works, but they watch the brain and how it reacts while they're in the MRI machine and show them video images and then watch how the brain lights up and reacts. And so what we were called to do was to have very distinct short sentences expressing either a loving statement to either a peer or like a husband, like a partner kind of thing, or to a child. And then also the other ranges of emotion, of really hateful emotion kind of things. Truly going toward the word hate, like there was a lot of I want to say anger, but it didn't have to do with being fair or not fair, which anger often has that feeling of I'm not being treated fairly, I get angry. But it was really just like saying with pure feeling, I hate you. And they were watching how the brain observes or how the brain reacts to these kinds of things. And it was interesting doing the project because they were just recording us, but there would be times where the doctor would come back in and he'd say, you know what, I didn't get really pure anger out of you. I need more specific. I got a little bit of sadness as well as this, and that's going to be confusing.
Yep.
So
yep.
We need to have it be that. And it was fascinating, exhausting, and amazing to be a part of that project. But doing really pure, like, of course, as you would expect, the joyful emotions were so much easier to do, at least for me, than the angry ones, because I typically find myself operating in that anger very much.
Yeah. Well, this other study talked about these actors, how it was a little harder to discern the perceived emotion when the actors, because there's a very close similarity between hey, I'm excited, or hey, what the heck, you know? I mean,
right.
When you say it that way, it's you got to either wait for some additional data to kind of judge what the emotion is, or kind of other things going on content-wise.
Sure.
And so, really learning to discern when you're hearing the emotions. So I think there's lots of, especially for kids with autism, they have these apps out there that let them kind of pick what either through facial expressions or through just listening, because we created some of those, you know, it's like, what emotion is this person expressing, you know, and can you tell that by just the sound of their voice? And so if you're, you know, kind of the whole, to go back to the title of this episode, how can you learn to change your voice to control the situation? I think part of it is deciding what is the emotion that you want to communicate and practice speaking in that manner, because you still need to sound authentic too.
Absolutely.
Because one of the exercises I ran across was try to say something when you're smiling and say the same thing when you're frowning.
If you record yourself, you will hear that. The
mm-hmm.
difference is perceptible. And that's certainly a technique as a voice talent that you do. Is
right.
You smile. You may be saying something seriously horribly sad, but somehow throwing that smile in there, which not, then you feel like you're a crazy
mm-hmm.
person, can really help or can make things strange. You just you have to go back and listen to it and kind of go, oh, what am I conveying
right.
here? I think the other thing, Nancy, is keeping in mind trying to remember, like, this is all kind of more, I guess, acting kind of things, but I think it can be helpful, especially if you listen to yourself. There are things that people say or how they say things, just the tone of their voice, their pitch of their voice,
mm-hmm.
when they're speaking to somebody that they care about, somebody that they love, somebody that's important to them, then somebody that's not. And that is can be very subtle. But there's also
yeah,
an intense
right.
listening to each other that happens. When
or I could say, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the exercises I do in a webinar, How Your Voice Can Make or Break the Sales, I just have a sentence. It's the same sentence, but a different words emphasized every single time. It's like, I didn't know he stole the car. 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 You know, just
right.
even in that exercise. So I tell people, dissect your corporate messaging or dissect the way that you leave a voicemail or whatever it might be to what is the impression you're trying to leave. And so one other little trick is even your facial expressions, even though you're not looking at the person, let's say you're leaving a voicemail, like raising your eyebrows versus burrowing your frow. Or furrowing your brow. Burrowing
your yes.
brow. It's a whole
furrowing
different
your
thing.
Brow, I like that.
Yeah, frow. Even trying to say the same thing with changing your facial expressions can change the interpretation of what you're trying to say or the perceived impression of what you're trying to say in that tone. And so the key is to practice it so that, as you kind of referenced, is that you become in the zone and it's much more natural and authentic and you aren't in this knee-shaking, shaky voice or higher-pitched voice. You have the right tone of voice. And so one of the things I'm going to share with, I'm going to be speaking at the IBM Women's Professional Group. I don't know what they call themselves. It's IBM employees that are women here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Around how your voice can impact your career.
Yeah.
And just getting women to be more aware of, you know, because some of them are born naturally just with a higher pitched voice or not as strong as it could be, and that definitely has an impact on the perception of how you are as an employee. What people think of you from your intelligence, what people think of you as your ability to command an audience or gain respect. And it's just an unfortunate thing, but that's the way it is. So even if you are born with kind of a naturally lighter, airy voice, you can learn to speak in a lower register. You can learn to speak in a manner that is more authoritative. And be in a, position yourself in a way to reach kind of that level of professionalism that you're looking for. You can do all these other things. You can dress right. You can have the right degree. You can have all the pedigree things that, you know, people look for. But it still comes down to, it's just a fact of life, taller people tend to have higher paying jobs. Thinner people have higher paying, you know, it's all these physical things. So if you've taken care of all of that and you're still having a problem, then you got to look at some of these other variables, such as the way you speak and your vocabulary and the tone of your voice.
Absolutely, Nancy. I think that one of the things that's really valuable that we have often talked about in a lot of the podcasting and teaching people how to talk when they're being recorded is that you stop using the word which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I have had to kind of watch myself as we started this process and moving forward with it. And it is amazing. If you take the moment that you would normally go, which means I'm going to finish a thought and I just need to think for a moment, so I'm going to just say, rather than that, just take the moment, take a breath, trust that the other person will be listening to you, because I think subconsciously when we do that, that placeholder verbiage that we do, it suggests that we don't trust the other person to be interested enough in what we're doing, which is, oh my gosh, confidence, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so, that's, plus it gives you time to maybe take a breath to keep composure as well.
Right. Sure.
I know that what I do is I kind of drag the word out when, so instead of using a filler, I just take the words that I'm saying and make them a little bit longer so my brain catches up with what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. I've taken to taking notes because there's times I'm very interested in what the other person is saying, but I've got this nagging comment that's going, you need to say this. It's very smart, and you would be joining in with what she's saying, and that's awesome. It's like, you know what? I'm going to write you down, and I'm going to continue listening to what this other person is saying, and if that topic comes back that makes sense, great. But if it doesn't, it's more important for me to stay with this person and have that connection than to eagerly and anxiously, and my voice gets higher when I talk about it, throw that comment in that didn't really fit anymore. And now I've disconnected our conversation and this great connection that
right.
we made because my ego wanted me to make sure I said that because that was smart back then. But was it really, you know?
Yeah. And also the space of not putting things in. So I was interviewed this week for a podcast show that a gentleman I met out in Colorado was producing for sales folks. And I said, you know, I'm a musician, and sometimes the best jazz improvisers know exactly where to place silence.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes all the difference in the world. And so in speaking, people that are really good orators know exactly where to put some silence. And it causes people to take a break. Like they said something that, and they stop. And it's either right at the moment where you want people to think about just what you said or to shift gears.
Absolutely. There's a rhythm to the speech, is what you're talking about.
Right.
You remind me of a poet I was just recently listening to, David White. And to hear a poet read their poetry, all those spaces are equally as important as the words and concepts and things that he's saying. And it's important.
Exactly. And that's part of the poem. I mean, they've written it thinking that way. And that's just the same thing as when you read a book by a certain author that I always picture their voice is, you know, especially if it's David Sedaris, but I usually listen to his books anyway, but if Amy Poehler's book that we
read it.
The book that both you and I have, Amy Poehler's book.
Yes.
Which we gave each other at Christmas.
Hilarious.
Yes, please. So I think of her voice as I'm reading it. And that's the other thing, as we're kind of getting close to our time here. Amy Poehler was interviewed in Fast Company magazine, and she said, you know, I sit around a conference room planning meetings for these projects she's in, and she says, you know, I'm trying to force myself to speak more like how men speak, because they speak slower, they seem to command the audience or the group better than women, who women tend to, and she says, I'm one of them, I talk really, really fast, and I talk blah, 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 I spit out these things, versus step back, speak slower, we'll kind of digest what your point is, pause.
Trust yourself, right?
And
yeah.
It was, she says, it's really hard. She says, I feel like I'm quicksand, but it makes a difference. And that's one of the things I want to share with these women groups, because we just, you know, we're just so social and just so like, I got to talk. And just step back, say fewer words. So on that note, I will speak your words and wrap up our session for today. So thank you for your words of wisdom and insights from your acting and voiceover.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for involving me every week. It's lovely.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, and join us next week for another episode of Training Tech Talk.
Thank you.